Lindsay. This is Crystal.
And I'm Trista.
I don't remember how this goes. You'd think I would. I'm talking about two Julias today.
Ooh, and I'm talking about nothing.
Yeah. Trista's being really lazy.
It's in my nature. What can I say?
So, I don't even remember if I told you what Julias I'm talking about
today. No, I just know that it's Julia, that's it.
Okay, I started out, like, I'm gonna do an episode on Anubis, like, the Egyptian god of the underworld, and somehow I ended up on two different women that lived in the 1800s named Julia. I don't know, I'm all over the place.
What's the pipeline that brought you there?
I couldn't get into Anubis, and I was like, these were two people on my list, so I was like, I'm combining them.
Fair enough.
So, they are both people I wanted to cover, on an episode, and they're very different, but they're both named Julia, and they ended up having lots of similarities in their stories, and
more than, like, more being named Julia?
Yeah, like, in even more than I realized until I got into it, where I was just like, geez, I didn't even know this.
Wonky.
It's pretty cool. But, so the first one was Julia Brown, who the legend says was a voodoo priestess in Louisiana that destroyed the whole town when she died, and the other
That's so cool!
I'm getting to it. I know.
There's more?
Well, like, I'm just giving you a brief thing on what each Julia was. So, okay. The other was Julia Bulette, the queen of the Comstock, in which you'll recognize her more when I talk more.
Okay. All right.
So, Julia Brown, as the legend goes, was born in 1845, and the legend says she was a voodoo priestess who lived and worked in New Orleans in the 1860s before picking up and moving to the village of Frenier. And I know I'm saying that wrong because I'm assuming it's French because it's outside of New Orleans and it's probably like Frenier or something like that.
Frenier.
But I can't do that, so Frenier it is, you guys. So, this is like in the midst of the Manchac Swamp, which I'm also saying wrong, but it's just swampy. It's a swampland.
Alright.
So, this village had no doctors, and rather than traveling the distance to New Orleans to find a doctor, the locals sought after Julia to be their local healer. And locals knew that whatever magic or power Julia was harnessing not only worked, but it was a powerful force. So Julia began to scare the locals, predicting when something bad was about to happen to them. The townspeople were terrified, not knowing whether she was foretelling future events or placing a curse. And regardless of what it was, Julia always knew when something bad was coming to Frenier. I'm going to stumble over it every time.
It's a pretty useful skill.
Right?
Wish I had that.
Yeah. So, it was on September 28th, 1915, that Julia made her final and most terrifying prediction to date.
Uh-oh.
She began singing, "One day I'm gonna die, and I'm gonna take all of you with me," over and over again. And there's an oral history account from a longtime area resident, Helen Schlosserberg, that says Aunt Julia Brown always sat on the front porch and played her guitar and sang songs that she would make up. The words to one of the songs she sang said that one day she would die and everything would die with her. And then she died. Knowing every other prediction Julia had made had come true, the townspeople were desperate. They all gathered at her funeral, hoping that the show of attention and respect would put her soul to rest. However, it was literally during her funeral that a sudden and unusually devastating hurricane ripped through the village, completely wiped it off the map, even to this day, and killed over 300 people in not only that village, but the surrounding areas. So, a news article from a few days after the hurricane stated that they did find Julia's corpse, but her casket was never found. Because, like, people literally went running out of the building during her funeral.
Oh.
Like, everyone knew a storm was coming, but they didn't know how bad it was going to be.
Yeah.
So there was some blame that she felt that the community was not respecting her enough or whatever, and that's why she prophesied that the whole village would go with her when she died. Although there are other versions that say she was much loved and that this was more of a warning of something that she knew was happening rather than something that she was trying to make happen. Like, you know, like telling people, hey, you should get out of town if I die.
Yeah, if I die. You know,
when I die. Wink, wink. So, like, just a warning that to everyone that when she died, she would take everything with her. So, they say the area is now haunted by her spirit and many of the people that also died that day. Despite efforts by developers to rebuild the area, the only thing that remains on the island where Julia Brown once called home was a mass grave where the dead were buried. As a result, the island is believed to be highly active with paranormal incidents. And some people say if you listen carefully, you may even hear the sound of a ghostly voice singing Julia's infamous song. Today, if you go to the area for yourself, there are boat tours that take you like through the swampy waters and over to the island. So that was the whole legend. But there really seems to be a lot of fabrication, and the real Julia Brown is honestly even more intriguing to me. Census records suggest that she was born Julia Bernard in Louisiana around 1845, then married a laborer named Celestin, which I think is such a cool name.
That is a pretty cool name, not gonna lie.
Celestin Brown in 1880. About 20 years later, the federal government gave her husband a 40-acre homestead plot to farm, property that likely passed on to Julia after her husband's death around 1914. At the time when Brown was alive, at the turn of the 20th century, the towns in this part of the swamp were prosperous settlements clustered on the edge of Lake Pontchartrain and sustained by logging the centuries-old cypress trees and farming cabbages in the thick black soil. The railroad was the town's lifeline, bringing groceries from New Orleans and hauling away the logs and cabbages as far as Chicago. They had no roads, no doctors, and no electricity, but had managed to carve out cohesive and self-reliant communities.
Yeah?
You're, like, not even listening.
I am listening. There's nothing to comment on. Okay. Wow, a cohesive community. That's crazy. I didn't know people could do that. It's really interesting.
I hate you. I love you.
I love you too.
Okay, so one of the articles I read about her was from deepsouthmag.com.
Awesome.
Which, you know, you can take it or leave it. But it stated that in most accounts of Brown's life, she's depicted as an exoticized, otherworldly persona that overshadows her identity as a living, breathing person. For example, these versions of her life almost never include the fact that, as documented in census records, she was a married, literate, black landowner. Her husband...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, her husband...
Sorry, I mean like...
That sounds really condescending.
I meant...
Oh, that's cool.
No, I meant like...
Want to try again?
I meant like... That's like... Why do they leave that out of the legend?
Like, I know, that's so why I feel dope. Like she's cooler in real life than her being a voodoo priestess. I mean, that's cool too, but... Anyways, so... her husband Celestin was a laborer from Texas and died just a year before she did, after 30 years of marriage. She also had children, all of whom would have been fully grown by the time that she died. According to Ancestry.com, she was in her 40s when she had three of her children, Matilda, S.E., and William.
S.E.?
It just says S.E., so I don't know if she was named like S.E. or it's the initials.
Oh, okay.
They went to school and worked. One was a tie maker, one was a cook. None of them died during the storm. A family such as this one, black, literate, and landowning in the 19th century American South, was unique, especially in a region made up of mostly German immigrants. They surely stood out, and it's hardly a stretch of the imagination to surmise that they experienced their fair share of racism in the Jim Crow South. In many of the stories about Brown, it's mentioned that she was lonely. And that's, like, in quotations. And she felt the town was using her for her healing gifts, so she started to resent the residents. And, like, all of this part is just, like, pretty made up.
Okay.
Like, because a lot of the stuff I read went into a lot more detail than I'm going to do here, but, you know, they're talking about how there isn't really an indication that she was some kind of, like, renowned healer or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, she probably, in this, you know, very remote area where there's limited resources, knew whatever healing that she knew, as most older women did in these areas, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, could attend to other people, just like any mom can, you know, bandage a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And so that was, like, really exaggerated in that this whole, like, mythos came out of it, that she was giving out her healing stuff and no one respected her enough and blah, 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 blah. When there's, like, literally no account of that happening.
All
right. It just, like, popped up on, like, the internet in, like, 10 years ago or something.
They were like, you know what would be crazy?
Well, because the story is crazy that she sang that song and then everyone did die from a hurricane at her funeral. Like, that's a crazy story.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't have to make it about, like, some other crazy stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anyways.
There's enough craziness here. Anyway.
There's enough craziness in real life. Okay, so the legends tell of the way that Brown...
99% sure none of this cop, what are you saying?
Why?
Because this wasn't plugged in all the way.
Fuck my life. Okay, so Trista gave me a heart attack.
I'm sorry.
And told me that I wasn't recording this whole time.
I'm sorry,
But I really was.
I was under the impression that you weren't, okay?
So now I have to find out where I was at. Okay, so the legends tell of the way Brown was feared because of her powers, but she was probably ignored because of her race. While people were apparently polite to her, odds were they did not interact much with her. The evolution of Julia Brown's story might, on the surface, seem like harmless folklore, but the way her identity's been altered has served to permanently shift her legacy from human to being other, as so many black people have been designated throughout history.
Mm.
Now, there's a whole tourist aspect to her memory and her death that likely has nothing to do with the real woman who had a family and a home, and maybe just a little bit of the foresight, but by any legitimate accounts was not actually a voodoo priestess with a vendetta against her community. So, yeah, so there was a crazy hurricane.
Yeah.
She did sing the song saying, when I die, everyone's going to go with me.
All right.
But that's pretty much it for the story. And she seems to have just been a kind of a, you know, badass wife and mother, landowning, literate black woman in Louisiana swamp.
What a gal.
Yeah. I mean, I would have liked to meet her. She sounds cool.
She does.
So, the second Julia, I'm much more knowledgeable about because we've been going to visit the Red Light Museum in Virginia City, Nevada.
Oh!
That was dedicated to her.
I know this Julia.
Since I was a kid. And by the way, it's no longer there, which is pretty upsetting to me. The last time we went to Virginia City, remember it was closed.
I remember,
and I was like,
yeah.
I take offense.
You're like, I love this museum. And we're going around and you're like, Where's the museum? And I was like, I don't know. You're the one with the museum knowledge.
Yeah. And then also the soup store that was, like, my favorite place to buy soup in the history of the world was also closed. And they're like, I went to the place where it used to be, and they're like, that hasn't been here in, like, 5 years. I was like, apparently I haven't been to Virginia City.
In a while.
In a while. But anyways, so it's no longer there, and, so this Julia is Julia Bulette, the famed prostitute and entrepreneur and firefighter, sort of, during Nevada's version of the Gold Rush, but it was really the Silver Rush, or the Comstock Lode.
Comstock Lode? There's so many jokes I can make.
I'm surprised you didn't. I was waiting for something wildly inappropriate, but...
It's okay, I'll spare you.
Thank you. The way I heard the legend about Julia Bulette as a kid was that, yeah, she was a prostitute, but she was adored by most of the community because she also nursed many of the miners back to health during illnesses and donated to and volunteered with the fire department, so she was kind of a staple in the community. That she was brutally murdered, but the women of the town wouldn't allow her to be buried in the town, so her grave's outside of town, which you can see on the local tours.
Why didn't they let her be buried in town?
Because she was a lady of the night.
Oh.
And that the fire department and the miners respected her so much, so they held a great procession out to her burial. So some of this is true, but like the first Julia I talked about, some of it's a little wonky. For example, it was like the church leaders that would not allow her, a fallen woman, to be buried in the hollow ground of the graveyard, not just the women of the town, because, let's be honest, she was doing them all a favor with her services. There were very few women, like almost no single women, and then thousands of men that were in the town for silver mining, like during its heyday, because Virginia City was a bustling town for a while. Mm-hmm. It only lasted like 10 years.
My favorite thing about like California, Nevada is going to like old abandoned ghost mining towns. I know Virginia City isn't an abandoned
It's only town. Still a town for the tourism though. They don't really do anything else there.
I know,
but it's fun to go to.
We went to Bodie.
Bodie, yes.
Bodie was definitely haunted.
Oh yeah. We already did an episode about Bodie.
I don't remember, but I probably told the story.
I'm sure you did.
You're like, Trista, don't talk to any of the ghosts, or else I'm going to disown you. And then I immediately go, is there any ghosts in here? Hello? And then I could see the pure, like, conflict on your face. You're like, should I just leave Trista here? Should I just drive away?
She's with the ghosts now. She sleeps with the ghosts. Mm. Yeah, well, I kind of grilled you, like, do not touch anything. You don't take a rock. Well, we already covered this in the other.
Yeah.
Go listen to the episode about ghost towns.
I so want to go on the tour.
Why is your dog walking so loudly outside the door?
Because she has attachment issues.
She does.
And if the door is closed, she sits out and waits for me. Anyways, I really want to go to the
You're really struggling here.
The big blue building, remember? But it was closed.
Oh, the mine.
You only need tours. Yes. I want to go there.
That scares me a little because there's big sections of it that are closed off because they're unstable. That freaks me out.
So I should go before it gets more unstable.
I don't want to fall down a mine shaft. I almost said a Minecraft.
But Minecraft.
That would be weird.
Okay. Anyway, sorry.
So back to this, yeah. I mean, Bodie is a similar vibe to Virginia City, for sure, except that people actually still live in Virginia City.
Yeah.
Oh, and I didn't put this in any of my notes, but we do have a bunch of cool artifacts from Virginia City that we got when someone was doing a remodel out there. And, like, some old, old books that are from, like, the 1800s. And almost every old book that I get as a gift or that I buy myself has super cool old photos somewhere shoved in the pages. So in the books that I got from Virginia City, like in an attic in some house that I said an addict,
an
like
addict.
A drug addict, an attic. There's some cool old photos in some of the books I got, I'll post pictures of those.
Didn't we also get the American flag?
Yes. And it had 48 stars on it.
Just pretty dope.
It was so there's some cool stuff in Virginia City. You should visit it if you get a chance. But
we should go back there sometime.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was a lot of walking. There were so many people.
The last time we went, it was an unusual amount of tourists. Like, we should go on a weekday. Okay. I've just been rambling on about stuff in Virginia City.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, there was a lot of men, single men, and almost no women, especially when she first arrived there. She was apparently one of the first prostitutes to arrive in Virginia City, so.
Oh, gotcha.
She was probably making a fair amount of money. But she was, so back to, you know, her history. She was born in England in 1832. She moved with her family to New Orleans a few years later, which was just a few years before Julia Brown was born, also in New Orleans. And I don't know that there was any connection between them. It's just weird because I didn't know that about Julia Bulette living in New Orleans.
That is so kind of wonky.
Like, when I started researching this, I was like, what? They would have, like, grown up in the same area at the same time. Because she lived as a child in New Orleans.
That's so crazy.
It's very weird and cool because they... I just decided to put these two people together and then there's all these connections. But, so... She moved to California in her 20s and then arrived in Virginia City in the early 1860s. And so she would have been in her late 20s. She was described as a beautiful, tall, and slim brunette with dark eyes and a refined in manner with a humorous, witty personality. There are a few records available from the period detailing the lives of prostitutes, and much of what has been written about Bulette is pure fiction. What is known is that she was a friend to the fire companies of the district, even being made an honorary member of Engine Company No. 1.
Yo! That's cool.
Yeah. Press reports of the area during that time, in particular those in the Territorial Enterprise, indicate that she responded to many of the fires, that she even worked the brakes on the hand pump, on the hand pumpers, and offered... Do not make any jokes. Other types of help. During the many...
what kinds of help?
I hate it. So, during the many flu epidemics, it's believed that she helped man soup lines and tended to the ill. The whole idea of her having an extravagant, fancy brothel was a little far-fetched, although she was, by all accounts, one of the more expensive sex workers in town and would spend the whole night with one client, so she costed more than most.
Oh.
The city is laid out with A and B streets being where the most wealthy had houses, like bankers and, you know, mine owners and engineers and stuff. And then C Street, that's the main street.
That we walked on?
Yeah. Oh. That's where all of the bars and restaurants and stores were. And then patrons could slip down to D Street if they wanted to find the company of a lady for the evening. So this is where she had a small building that she ran her business out of. On the night of January 19th, 1867, she tried to attend the opera and was denied unless she sat in a closed-off section, which was reserved for ladies of the night, and she refused.
Oh.
Because you also have to remember she was one of the only women in the whole town at first, and it was a boom town. So in, like, 5 years... Like, 5 years later, there were whole families and, like, civilizations started to come to the area.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, some of the uppity wives were arriving and were like, absolutely not. So, this happened very quickly. And it was, like, below her dignity to sit in a sectioned-off area when she had always attended the opera house without any fuss. So, instead, she left and she went to one of her friends' houses for dinner, Gertrude Holmes. And she left her house a little after 11 o'clock that evening, and Julia explained to her that she was going to meet a minor friend at her house. A minor, not a minor.
No, I got it.
Someone from
you.
The mines, not a child. And that that was the last time that any of her friends saw her alive. The next morning at about 11:30 a.m., her friend found her body where she... and she had been bludgeoned and strangled to death.
Oh, my God.
And many of her belongings had been taken. The mines, mills, and even the saloons closed out of respect. The next day, a cold, snowy Monday, a crowd turned out for her funeral at the firehouse. Although the religious leaders held firm with a town regulation that no prostitute should be buried in their cemetery, her admirers found a spot on a nearby hill overlooking the town. They arranged for a formal Catholic funeral and placed Julia in a silver-handled casket carried by a black-plumed, glass-walled hearse. Some 60 firemen led the procession to her grave, which, in a town of, like, not very many, why is there 60 firemen? I mean, I get everything was...
It's a mining town.
Everything was built out of wood and probably constantly catching on fire, so I get it.
I assume there was a lot of fire hazards.
Yeah, and plus, back then, they're having to, like, hand carry buckets of water, so it would take a lot of firemen.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Gotta have a whole assembly line.
And it's like they were also just like on call firemen. They probably were just minors too. It's mm-hmm. not like they were all day fighting fires, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't a full time job. Or maybe it was, I don't know. So anyways, they led the procession to her grave, followed by the Brigade Nevada Militia Band. To the accompaniment of the band's funeral dirges, 16 carriages packed with mourners rolled behind the hearse. Trailing after them, thousands of dejected miners and storekeepers trudged through the gusty snow to Bielet's final resting place. After several men solemnly put in place a wooden marker, bearing the painted name Julia, the procession shuffled back down the hill. The men of Engine Company Number 1 filled the frigid air with a heart-rending version of The Girl I Left Behind. The town they returned to was draped in black for the first time since President Abraham Lincoln's assassination.
Oh, gosh! My favorite president! Don't quote me on that.
Do we need to discuss about when you found out about Abraham Lincoln's assassination?
How old was I?
I think you were probably like 7.
I was 7. I was at elementary school.
Obviously.
You are when you're 7. And
make your dog stop.
She's just loud. Look at how cute she is. Anyways, as when you're 7, you're at school, and we're learning about history and about Abraham Lincoln. And I don't really remember this, but as Mother tells the story, she picks me up from school, and I get into the car all solemnly, and I just burst into tears. And Mom's like, "What's the matter? What happened to you? Are you okay?" And I go, "We were in history today. And we were watching a show about Abraham Lincoln.
And he died.
And he's dead. And he tried so hard.
The saddest thing was that, like, I had to keep a straight face. That's not the saddest thing, but that was the hardest thing. And then also, like, you were like, I had to keep it in all day. Like, so I wasn't crying in front of my class. So the second you got in the car, you're just like, Abraham Lincoln's dead. And I was just like,
been dead for a while.
What world am I in? So anyways.
Yeah, but I don't remember this, but it does honestly sound like something I do, so I don't doubt it.
It's 100% true.
You're so loud.
God, she's louder than everyone. So anyways, Abraham Lincoln. Even the bars remained closed. It was a very big deal in the local newspapers, and that's when the, like, mythos of Julia really began. They did eventually arrest a Frenchman named John...
It's always the French, isn't it?
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know either. It came out of my mouth.
John Millien. I can't say French things. For her murder, because he had some of her stolen belongings. And he maintained his innocence. Like, he said, oh, these guys, you know, sold me these things. Or whatever, or they stored these things here, and they were going to come back for them. And he maintained his innocence. He was convicted on circumstantial evidence. I don't feel like I have nearly enough information to decide if he was guilty or not.
Yeah.
There is a lot of talk about that, like, because he didn't fully understand the language too. He didn't understand the court proceedings, like,
poor guy.
That he was kind of just framed, like, they, you know, whatever. I don't know if it was him or not, but I mean, I hope it was him, because that would really suck if it wasn't.
It really would.
But anyways, he was convicted on circumstantial evidence and was hanged in April of 1868. And Mark Twain attended the hanging because he was a reporter at the time in the area.
Oh, I thought he was an admirer.
Admirer?
Yeah, I was like, wow, Mark.
He could have been. He was in Virginia City at the same time she was, so he could have been one of her clients. But side note, Mark Twain was also a writer for the Mountain Messenger in Downeyville, where I work all the time. But he used his real name, Sam Clemens. And
It's a way less cool name.
Was the oldest continuously circulated newspaper in California. Which, Downeyville is like as small as Virginia City. So it's a weird place to have a courthouse. You need to stop. This dog is out of control.
Look at her.
So if you want to read more about the life of Julia Bulette and the times and place she lived, I would recommend a book called Gold Diggers and Silver Miners, Prostitution and Social Life on the Comstock Lode by Marion S. Goldman, which is kind of a funny title, too. Because she does not romanticize how completely terrible it often was for Julia and others like her, as well as the fact that... Jesus Christ.
Sorry, she scared me. Kicked out.
The dog got kicked out. She couldn't get her shit together.
I miss her already.
Okay, so... yeah, I recommend this book because, you know, she talks really real about what it was like for these women, not in some, like, romanticized way. And, you know, if not all, like, in most cases, if not all women were forced into prostitution to survive, not because they just wanted to live life in the fast lane, so to speak, and that this life usually meant being surrounded by degradation, disease, and violence. A lot of the lore that surrounded her was the whole, like, hooker with a heart of gold thing. That they also made her very larger than life in the newspaper articles following her death because it was sensational, but her fortune was overstated. She had actually been ill for several months before her death.
Aww.
And was in debt. So as much as I'd like to believe that she was like this independent lady living her life on her terms, it was not very accurate. And so anyways, I like that account as opposed to others that really made it like, oh, she's just, you know, living her best life and making all this money and she's attained this level of respect and whatever, because it really wasn't true. I mean, the night before she died, she got turned away from the opera, so
yeah.
Things were not super great. But,
imagine, like, being the dude who turned her away from the opera and then being like, oh, she got murdered, and you're like, damn, if only I had let her into the opera.
Well, it seems like she already had an appointment with somebody later that night, so I think that was going to happen regardless, but... Anyways, the museum in Virginia City that is now closed used to have a sign that stated, Julia's remembered for her golden heart and remains Nevada's most celebrated courtesan. As people remember the request that her faults be buried with her and her virtues live. And that is the story of Julia Bulette and her tragic end. So,
yep.
Both of these Julias weirdly shared more than just their first names and their last initials and their childhoods in New Orleans. They both had independent means. They were regarded as healers to some degree in their communities while also being outsiders in a lot of ways. They had dramatic deaths and funerals. Both have long-standing lore about them amongst ghost hunters, which has overshadowed their real lives and humanity. So, I just thought they were both super interesting, and obviously, I didn't really know that much about Julia Brown before I had seen some stuff on her online, and I just think they were both pretty cool. I would have liked to meet them both, for sure.
I agree.
And it sounds like Julia Brown had a much longer life, and I don't know how she died. I couldn't find that. But hopefully it wasn't violent.
Hopefully she didn't get murdered.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah.
But it's really a bummer how, you know, Julia Bulette died, obviously.
Yeah.
And... Like, one of my first trips to Virginia City when I was probably, like, I don't know, like, 11 or something, me and my cousin and my sister spent hours while my grandma was gambling in the casino. We spent hours going through the whole entire graveyard in Virginia City, like, reading all the descriptions and the names, which is still, like, one of my favorite things to do.
That's pretty dope. Did you find any good cooking recipes on any of the gravestones?
I don't remember. This was a really long time ago.
Darn. We should hit up our local cemetery, see if any grandmas left their cookie recipes in the mortal world.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
But anyways, Virginia City is a cool place.
Grandmas always have the best cookies. The best recipes, actually.
Well, that's why you have some in your recipe book.
That is. Thank you, Grandma.
So that is all. This one's kind of short because Trista didn't do anything, but that's okay.
Like always, my lazy belligerent child never does anything.
I do not say that. Except for right now.
Okay.
And I have never called you belligerent in my life.
I know, I just spit it out. It was a fun word to say in the moment.
Okay. So, follow us on all the stuff on Instagram and... Oh my god, I'm trying to make a TikTok.
Oh no.
And I don't know how. And Tristan won't help me, so...
Well, I don't know how... I don't know how to...
No, not making a video. I just mean, like, an account.
You said you already made an account.
For myself, but I don't know how to use it. So, anyways.
But it's extremely self-explanatory.
People keep asking me if we have a TikTok, and I'm like, I don't know how to do that. So, maybe at some point...
On a TikTok.
I have no idea. You have to tell me these things. I don't know. We may or may not have a TikTok, but at this point, we don't. So follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and you can email us at forensicmythology@gmail.com or visit our website at forensicmythology.com. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, I just said it like a question.
Yeah. Wait, did you say follow? Wait. Never mind.
Okay, thanks. Okay, bye.
Bye.